Let's finish on multimedia applications if we can this morning. Quickly going through streaming of stored audio and video. So what we covered last week was voice calls, voice over IP, as well as did we cover something on audio? No, this is our first aspect of audio. This is about there's a server that has the audio and video content, and there are users that want to listen and view that content. So the examples, for example, streaming audio, internet radio, there's a server that has the music, and many people listen to that at the same time across the internet. And of course, web-based video is another well-known example. YouTube. There's the YouTube server which has all the videos stored. And when you go to the website, you stream the video to your computer. Now, the content, the original audio and video, is stored on a streaming server, what we call the server that streams the content. If it's live content, then it's generated and then stored. YouTube generally is not live content. It's a video that's recorded and put onto the streaming server. If it's live, let's say live of a football match, then it's recorded. So the content is generated, put onto the streaming server, and in both cases, there's a streaming server that has the content, the audio and video. The users, you and I, request the content. So we contact the streaming server saying, I want to view this particular content, and normally that's done with a web browser or some media player. The media player may be a standalone. You open up your media player and you type in a URL, and that sends a request to the streaming server, or embedded in a web page. A flash media player, which is embedded in your web page. When you go to the YouTube website and you click on the link to view a video, then your Flash media player sends a request to the streaming server, requesting the streaming server to start streaming the content to your media player. The requests are either direct to a streaming server or via a separate web server. We'll show the two cases shortly. And then the content is sent from the streaming server to the client. And there are different approaches using standard protocols like RTP, which we covered when we talked about voice. The server generates RTP packets, which contain the audio or the video, and sends them at a frequent rate. And your client receives them and plays back the video or audio. We can do the same simply using HTTP. And some applications have their own protocols. Flash, for example, has its Flash, I think RTMP, a Flash protocol for streaming content between a Flash server and a Flash media player. So two different ways to access that content. Here we have a server, in this case, a simple web server which has some web pages as well as some audio. So I've got my own web server. On there, I store some audio files that I would like people to be able to stream to their web browser. The client opens their web browser using HTTP, sends a normal request for a particular file. And this may be for what's called a meta file. Not for the actual content, but for a file that describes that content. Send a request for this meta file. The web server sends back the meta file which describes the content. And then your web browser sends that meta file, or at least the information in it, to a media player on your computer, which then contacts the web server and receives the content. That is, the server streams the content to the media player. So the media player may be a standalone player like Windows Media Player, or maybe even the Flash Media Player or the Flash plugin that your browser has. This meta file describes the location of the content, the encoding, what encoder or decoder is needed to view the content, some name and other information about who created the content. So it doesn't contain the actual content, it's a description of the content. And some of the examples of the types or extensions that you may have seen, RAM, playlist files, and so on. So here, we send a request. So we type in a URL for a particular piece of content, which is a meta file. The meta file comes back. We send that to the media player. The media player reads the meta file and sees the location of the content, and then sends another request to a web server saying, please stream me that content. And that content is streamed to the media player. In this case, we're saying that the media player uses HTTP to request the content. The streaming may happen with HTTP or with something specific like RTP, a protocol dedicated to streaming data. Of course, it doesn't have to be the same server. Here's another case where we have a similar approach, your web browser. What you do is you type in a URL. You type in a URL using your web browser. So your client sends a normal HTTP request to a web server requesting this content. So you send a request to the web server. Web server sends back some meta file or some file that describes the content. Response. So this is a simple GET request. This URL. This is sending back, in this example, the file. And inside this file is some information that tell us where the streaming server is and how to contact the streaming server. So when we receive the response, our web browser then uses our inbuilt media player. And the media player then sends a request. And the request, again, can be using HTTP or using a specific protocol. There are other protocols for requesting content. And, of course, they may be separate servers. So this request may be to and well, the format of that. Depends on what we want to view. So here's the request to our web server for the media file, for the meta file or the file that describes the content. We get the response back. And then our media player, this is our browser, our media player sends a request to a streaming server. So this is our web server, this is our streaming server, which could be different computers. And this starts streaming the content. That is sending packets using either HTTP or a specific protocol containing actual video or audio. Could be using RTP, for example, where the streaming server takes the video, like I did with the VLC demonstration, it takes the video, creates packets, and sends them. And as those packets are received, our media player decodes them and plays them on the screen. So this is the streaming part here. We've just got continuous stream of data as the video is played. In this case, we don't need to use HTTP for a content delivery. That is, we can use a specific protocol that doesn't rely on HTTP here, such as RTP. Flash I think RTMP is the protocol that Flash uses. So when you watch YouTube videos, then there's a streaming server at YouTube which is running a Flash-based streaming server. And what it does is it takes the video and sends it as packets using the protocol RTMP, which is a proprietary protocol for Flash, and it sends them to your Flash player in your web browser, which decodes them and plays them on the screen. So that's the basics of streaming across the internet. RTSP, real-time streaming protocol, is another protocol for doing things like controlling the stream. Okay, we're streaming it, we want to pause. We send a special message and tell the streaming server to pause the stream. Stop sending us packets. And we want to restart or fast forward or to go to a particular location. RTSP is used to communicate between our media player and our streaming server to control the stream of data that's coming. So there are a variety of different protocols available for use. Different applications use different combinations. Flash uses its own protocol. HTML5 allows you to embed videos and you can stream using different protocols like HTTP or RTP. If you try VLC and you run VLC client and server, you'll see there are many options for streaming. When I demonstrated last week, I think I used UDP. Directly putting the data inside UDP packets and sending, but you can choose HTTP, UDP, RTP, and others. So they are the protocols for sending the data from streaming server to client. And that's all we want to say very briefly about streaming audio and video. The last topic on multimedia applications is TV. Again, similar concept where we have video content on a server and we want to stream it to multiple users. So IPTV, that is TV over the internet. But when we talk about IPTV, we don't think necessarily of YouTube, but we think of normal quality TV that you can see on your TV set that is viewed from the cable or the microwave transmissions. YouTube, in some cases, can give us high quality, but in most cases it's a small screen and you cannot scale up to a large screen and get the same quality. IPTV, we're talking about normal quality TV delivered across an IP network. Now, there are three approaches for delivering TV across the internet. The internet are web-based applications like YouTube. That is, you can watch most TV channels via a website. But usually they're a small image. Or if you have a large image, the quality of that does not match what you would get via your normal TV. And to get... because they have a small image, then normally we need speeds less than 1 megabit per second to be able to view that. But they do not equate to be able to watch the high quality TV that you can, or high quality image that you can see on your normal TV. Another approach is file-based distribution. Download a file and then watch it. That's not streaming. That's a case where you download an entire file and watch it once you've downloaded the entire file. So it's not real time in that case. So in this case, the quality depends upon the encoding of the file. So let's say we take one day to download a file and then watch it. We can watch a high quality TV show even if it runs for just 1 hour. So this is an alternative for distributing TV and video across the internet. We call it file-based because we download the file and then watch. What we want to talk about is, when we generally refer to IPTV, is high-quality images real-time reception on a large TV display. Not on a PC, but say on a 40-inch screen to be able to get the quality that you would get if you had a cable TV or satellite TV, but over an IP network. To do this in the internet, we require different resources and to control the network, because we will see shortly that we need very high performance, because to get high quality, we need to send a high bit rate. So we need mechanisms like multicasting so that the TV can be streamed to multiple users at the same time in an efficient manner. If there are 1,000 people watching the same channel, we'd like to be able to use multicasting so that the packets sent across the network are not duplicated when unnecessary. That's what multicasting allows us to do. We'd like to have quality of service control so that if we're using our IP network and maybe there are some people paying more than others, then those people paying more will have their packets and as a result their TV that they watch guaranteed to be delivered with some performance limits so that we can get the high quality streaming. Without quality of service control, if we combine other applications, TV and normal web browsing, then sometimes the TV quality will go down and it will not match what we require. And things like caching. Caching means that content that is regularly viewed and downloaded is stored closer to the person who's viewing that content. Often IPTV is delivered across a network which is separate from what we consider as the general internet. Different physical infrastructure. Because the general internet will not support these mechanisms that we need. We'll explain that as in this topic. All right, the equipment. This is our home. We have some modem that connects from some network using Ethernet, fast or gigabit Ethernet inside the home, maybe even wireless in some cases, and all our entertainment devices are connected so that we can listen to audio and view video that's delivered across the IP network rather than being delivered across the cable network or delivered via satellite. And maybe we need an IP-based set-top box to control all these devices and to make sure that the audio, as we receive it, is delivered to the stereo to be played back while the video component is delivered to the TV to view that. Some example applications, and I think you can think of these and more. Of course, digital TV, that is delivering high-quality TV across the IP network. But not just TV, video on demand, for example. You want to watch a particular video, you choose that video, press play, and it's streamed to you as you want to watch it across the IP network. Similar to pay-per-view type scenarios. And other applications that could be used if we have an IP network which we can deliver high-quality TV or video and audio content, then we can extend it to support other things like distance-based learning. That is, you can sit in on lectures from home and so on. Video chat and video teleconference. So if we can have a network that supports this, then many different applications can be delivered. Because our normal internet, we don't have quality of service control across the entire network and multicasting is not built into the normal internet, then often if a company wants to provide IPTV, they have a separate network or they use their own physical network for delivery. A private IP network. So we can either use the existing IP networks that the companies own and operate, or even build our own IP network. a separate network is often used because we need to guarantee the quality that's delivered to the user. When you watch TV at home via cable or satellite or just via the normal antenna, then in most cases you expect to receive the same quality all day. You don't expect the TV to stop, that is, the video or the movie you're watching to freeze for 5 seconds and then restart. So we'd like the same level of service on our IP network. Unfortunately, the normal internet does not provide that control that we need to guarantee high quality. That's why sometimes companies build their own separate IP network for delivery of TV. Because if a company owns and operates the entire IP network, then they can control the performance. They can use their own mechanisms to control the performance. So the typical setup could look like this. Here's a home network. So this is our home, for example, maybe Ethernet or wireless LAN inside the home. And we have a modem or a router that connects to our, what we call our internet service provider access network. So we'd have many homes connecting into this network. These are our customers. And there may be multiple access networks, that is one for each region or each town or each area of a city. And they all connected together via the ISP core network. That may be a network across Bangkok or even across the entire country. And this network would be devices and links owned and operated by one organization, one ISP. And that ISP would have a router that connects to the public internet for normal internet access. They'd have a device, a gateway that connects to the normal telephone network, the public switch telephone network, because we'd still like to make telephone calls to people out in other parts or other networks. And for the video or the TV, we'd connect to a TV network. So here's the content. Say a TV station that produces the content would have a link into the ISP's network. This device that connects the two is referred to as a video head end. So the delivery across this TV network may not be an IP network. It could be using satellite or any form of transmission. So what happens? The content is produced by a TV station. It's delivered to the video head end. This converts it into a format that can be delivered across an IP network, like MPEG-4, for example. So it does the encoding and sends as packets, using, for example, RTP, across the ISP core network, eventually to the customer. So these three networks are IP-based networks. We're using the internet protocol in them. In this, we may not be using the internet protocol. Here's the normal telephone network. Here we're using the internet protocol. This is for access to our normal web services or internet services, the browse websites. So the customer, when they browse websites, their data goes out in this direction. When you make a normal telephone call, that is, you call someone on their home telephone line, then you use voice over IP to connect to the gateway and then use the normal old public switch telephone network to make a call to the destination out here. And when you're viewing TV, you don't have a satellite connection or you don't have a normal cable connection. Your TV is delivered across the IP network that you're connected to here. So the three services of TV, telephone, and internet access are all delivered across the same ISP network to your home. Rather than having a separate cable coming out of your home for your telephone line, another your, say, cable TV access, and a third cable or a third connection for internet access, everything is delivered across the single from your ISP. That's the idea. let's draw that and list some of the protocols that may be used in here. So our TV station, which generates the content, the video head end, and we have our telephone gateway. We have our internet gateway or a border router that is inside here is could be one autonomous system, and this is another autonomous system. So this is the network of one ISP. Another ISP could be here. So this could be a tier 2 ISP and a tier 1 ISP here, for example. So this is our router that connects to the general internet. And all of these are connected inside the ISP's core network. So we have a set of routers inside this network, let's say across Thailand or across, at least across the city of Bangkok. These are routers inside this core network, going to different locations, for example. And then we have the access, what do we call it? ISP access network. Then we have our home. So that's just drawing that picture where we have our home. We have a router, connects via an access network to the core network, which is really a set of routers and links across some large area, and they connect to three separate networks. The public internet, the public switch telephone network, and to the TV distribution network. What protocols or technologies that maybe we may be used? Let's give some examples. From the TV station video head end, well, that may be an IP-based technology, or it could be simply delivery via microwave. The same way that TV is distributed, TV station across a city now. Towers, they transmit microwave to receiving towers, and finally distributed to the users. Well, we could have a microwave link, for example, or even a satellite link if it's across a country or a region that goes from the TV station that transmits the video to the video head. Be IP based. Head end takes what's received, the TV content, and converts it into a format that can be delivered across the IP network. For example, it converts it into a format MPEG-4, just an example, and uses RTP to send that across the network. So the video is converted into an appropriate format that people can view, and a streaming protocol, such as RTP, is used to send as packets across our IP network. What else have we got? Inside our home, from the other direction, for example, we could be using Ethernet or wireless LAN simply for delivery of content to different devices inside our home. This is a router, and we can deliver to the stereo, to different TVs, to computers and so on. The access network, this is how do we access the internet or the ISP's network from our home. ADSL is an example. Optical fiber is another example. So this is the link from our home to the ISP's core network. If it's in some places only ADSL or variations of ADSL or DSL are available, where we use the copper link from our home, but if we have a direct optical connection into our home, then we could have optical fiber connecting to the ISP core network. Inside the core network, most likely these links are optical links. That is, the network across the city or across the country. These are fast links using technologies such as SDH, maybe PDH in some places, for high-speed delivery inside the internet service provider's network. So there are many customers with access links into the core network, and this distributes the content for all of those customers. So the video that's being streamed to my home using RTP from here is sent across some path inside the ISP core network towards my access network, and then across ADSL, for example, into my router, and then across Ethernet into the different devices inside the home. So that's the video delivery. When I want to make a phone call, I would like to use the same IP network. So use voice over IP in this case. I make a phone call from my home. We use RTP, so we encode our voice and use RTP to send the voice packets. Actually, first we use SIP to set up a connection. To make a phone call, we need to do some signaling to make the call. We use SIP to set up a connection via this gateway to the public telephone network, which would then use SS7 to do signaling and make this phone ring. If we're calling this person, the signaling protocols would send a message to here, so the phone starts to ring. They pick up. When we're talking, then I'm sending, using RTP, my voice packets across this internet to the gateway, and then this gateway is converting those RTP packets into audio that can be sent across the normal public switch telephone network to anyone in the world in this case. So that's a telephone call. And then general internet access. You're browsing the web, then again the packets simply go to this border router and then are sent to the next ISP and to the next ISP, eventually to the destination server and back. So the idea is to integrate television, telephone, and general internet access and use the one network to support all of them. And, for example, you pay one bill, that is, you subscribe to one service company, one ISP, and they deliver all three services via their network. Now, all right, let's use that diagram for the next slides. So that's just some examples of the techniques and protocols that may be used in that network. So the video head end, as we've said, converts the audio and video that comes from the TV station, the people who produce the content, into an appropriate format to the IP network, MPEG-2, MPEG-4, for example, and then sends it using one of our IP-based protocols, such as RTP. Inside our home, we need a set-top box that manages the distribution of the content inside our home. So it sends the telephone, the IP packets, which are for a telephone call, to our telephone inside the home. It sends the video to our TV. It sends the audio that comes from the TV station to our stereo system. And it sends the web browsing traffic to our computer, for example. So the set-top box is controlling the distribution of content inside our home. some of the protocols used for video delivery, RTP, RTSP for controlling, that is pausing and starting videos, for example. So some of the protocols that we've talked about in the previous topics. Another important thing is controlling, especially the ISP network. Here I've drawn one house. There are many customers of this ISP. So this is repeated for many different people. That is, everyone is viewing TV content. Everyone is making voice calls. Everyone is using the internet, all using this ISP network. Then the resources in this using things like multicast and quality of service mechanisms. Quality of service, for example, a particular router. The routers inside this network, if we look in detail, remember, with quality of service control, we control the packets as they come into queues, and we can give different packets priority. So this router, we have a queue of packets to transmit. There may be in that queue at some point in time some video packets, some telephone or voice packets for a telephone call, and some packets for web browsing. Then the quality of service control would make sure that the appropriate packets are given priority. For example, the video packets are transmitted first. The web browsing packets are delayed because we prefer to give priority to video and telephone packets because they need short delay. So the ISP could have their own quality of service control mechanisms inside their network because the one company owns and operates all these routers. They can make their own decision how to control that. The problem with manual internet is that because there are many different ISPs, there's no agreement on how to perform quality of service control across the different ISPs. So if we can have the single ISP, then they can control their network. And they can say, all subscribers to our premium video service, their packets will be given priority across all other packets. All people who have paid for a cheap telephone package will be given lower priority, and so on. So they can control that and provide the service that the users expect. In addition, we need, or it makes sense to use multicast, because especially with TV, we've got one TV station producing content, and we'd have many customers viewing the same content at the same time. So multicast would send one copy of that TV content, a packet containing the video, towards each of the destinations. Rather than having to repeat it for each subscriber, we send a single packet and then distribute to the individual destinations from the access. So we make use of multicast in this case. And we need other things, of course, as well, to make sure that the right people are accessing the service and that they pay for the service. That is, that we can count what they're using so that we can charge them appropriately. And finally, the network technology inside the core network, things like SDH and optical fiber. Inside the access network, ADSL, most likely improved variants of ADSL, ADSL2, ADSL2+, optical fiber, coaxial cable in some cases. Inside the home, things like Ethernet or fast and gigabit Ethernet and wireless LAN. So we see all the things that we've talked about all course coming together in this example IP network. That is, we have different access and core network technologies. We have the different network management control mechanisms and different protocols for delivering voice and video. What type of data rate are we talking about for delivering such a service? Here's an example. Here's an example where we have a home. Let's say a voice call, we need 64 kilobits per second for a voice call. And we'd like to deliver high speed or internet access that's, say, 2 or 4 megabits per second per user. That is, if you're browsing websites, then the data rate for each user is, say, up to 4 megabits per second. Plus, we have separately TV. If we want standard definition TV, we're talking about up to 4 megabits per second per channel that we want to watch. If we want high definition TV, we're up to 10 megabits per second. So in a house where we have many or multiple people, and we'd sometimes want to make a voice call, or maybe even two voice calls, to have two TVs or multiple TVs where we can watch different channels at the same time, and have someone also accessing the internet, then we're talking about data rates of 15 to 30 megabits per second to the house. That is, coming into here, up to 30 megabits per second would be needed to support all of these services at the same time. For delivering this, the bottleneck is usually the access network, or the last mile of the network, the last portion of the network to the customer. Networks using optical fiber can support such services, even with thousands of different customers. Each customer, if they need 30 megabits per second, with optical fiber, we can get the speeds to support that. Inside our home, we can support that. Delivering 30 megabits per second inside the home is possible using fast Ethernet, gigabit Ethernet, and even some variants of wireless LAN. The bottleneck is this part, getting from the ISP core network to the home, which is called the access network. That's the slowest part of the current technologies. In terms of the core network, what does a core network need to support? Well, we can look at it from two perspectives. Let's say we're looking at the TV that needs to be sent across this core network. We have many customers. We need to send that TV to all of the customers. This is an example which shows if we've got streaming TV, as the number of channels that we want to provide increases, the capacity of the core network increases. So the capacity of the core network here is 1 second. If we're using standard definition TV, let's say, what is this, at 100 channels, each channel here would require about 5 megabits per second. So if standard definition TV, one channel requires 5 megabits per second. If we want to be able to deliver 100 channels to the different customers, then we'd need about 500 megabits per second capacity in the core network. With high definition TV, that goes up, because per channel we need more. So in this example, it's got 100 channels, brings us up to 1.6 gigabits per second. But that a capacity of 2 gigabit per second inside a core network is possible with optical fiber. So this is not much of an issue. That's achievable nowadays. That's with streaming TV, where we can use multicast. That is, it doesn't matter how many subscribers, with multicast, we just send one packet across the core network per channel. Even if there are 1,000 people watching that channel at the same time, we send one packet across the core network, and then we send individual copies to each of the homes. So it doesn't matter the number of users in this case. It's simply the capacity requirements go up as the number of channels to be delivered goes up. If we have 100 users, every user watching a different channel at the exact same time, then the capacity require for high definition TV is 1%. If we have 1,000 users, where 10 users are watching one channel, another 10 users watching another channel, and so on, so there are 100 different channels, 10 people watching the same channel at the same time, because we multicast across the corner, we just need one packet per channel, not per user. So again, the requirements on the core network is identical. With multicast, we don't increase the requirements of the core network per user. But that's with streaming TV. The problem arises with video on demand. With normal TV, everyone who's watching the same channel is viewing the same content at the same time. We can use multicast because we send one packet, and in that same packet we make a copy and deliver it to the individual subscribers watching that channel. With video on demand, it's different. One user presses play on a particular video that they want to watch. That video should be streamed to that user. 5 seconds later, another user presses play on the same video. We cannot use multicast in this case because the two users have started watching at different times. Even though it's the same content, when we send a packet to the first user who's watching that video, that contains the first 1 second of video, but then another user starts watching 1 minute later, send that same packet again across our network. We cannot make use of multicast in this case. So that's where, if we want to have video on demand, the amount of capacity needed in our network increases as the number of subscribers or users increase, the number of video on demand subscribers. So again, this is showing different codecs, but I think this is back to front. I think MPEG-4 has more capacity than MPEG-2. I think these should be rotated. That is, if we have 25 subscribers using the network at the same time, then we essentially need to send 25 streams of video at the same time across our core network. And that's, if we're using, depending on the codec we're using, I think with MPEG-4 it would give us this, which is about 5 gigabits per second. If we increase the number of people who are watching or using video on demand at the same time, we increase the capacity needed for our core network. Because each user needs their own stream of packets. So now we're talking about tens of gigabits per second up to maybe even 100 gigabit per second across the core network. And that's harder and, of course, more expensive to provide to users. And that's why sometimes video on demand services will, at least in the past, did not allow you to start the video at any time. You could just start it at certain one-hour intervals. That is, you can start that video at 8 p.m. or 9 p.m. or 10 p.m. You cannot start it at 9:01, 9:03. You cannot start it exactly when you want. In that case, because there will be multiple people starting that video at 8 p.m., we can multicast each of those subscribers. But if you want true video on demand, where anyone can start the video at any time, the capacity needed for our core network increases as the number of subscribers increase. That's the core network. What about the access network, which before we said is the bottleneck? What can we provide, or what can we use in the access network? Well, we've covered technology. ADSL, ADSL 2+. Many homes have copper lines going into them. Therefore, it makes sense to try to reuse that copper cable coming into your home. And ADSL and the variants of ADSL do that. Unfortunately, download speeds of ADSL depend upon the distance from you your home to a telephone exchange, the distance of that copper cable. Some typical speeds for ADSL 2+, if you're within 300 metres of the telephone exchange, up to 26 megabits per second. If you're 3 kilometres away, down to 7 megabits per second. This is starting to be too low to deliver TV over. We said before that one standard definition channel needs 4 megabits per second. Not support it. So generally ADSL and ADSL 2+ technologies are only suitable when the home is close to the telephone exchange. That is, the link or the copper cable is short. If you're too far away, the speeds are not high enough. That's why we try to make use of optical fiber where possible, and make this link from the home to the exchange as short as possible. And from the exchange to the network, we use optical fiber. Look at this in a bit more detail, the access network. Here's our copper cable, and here's our telephone exchange. And with ADSL, we use our normal telephone line, our copper telephone line coming from the house, and we send our data to the exchange, and that telephone exchange has a special device that then connects into the ISP's network. And that connection is typically by optical fiber. So this exchange has many homes connected to it. So all the homes in some area connect, have copper cables into that exchange, and then that exchange has one or multiple links to the ISP, usually via optical fiber. So this can be high speed. We don't have so many limits here. It's this link that's the limitation. And with ADSL, the longer that link is, the slower the speeds we can achieve. So the objective is then, let's shorten this link so that we can achieve higher speeds. The shorter the copper link, the higher the speeds we can achieve across it. Well, the shortest approach is to remove the telephone exchange and bring optical fiber directly into the home. So if we remove the telephone exchange and remove the copper link and provide optical fiber into this home and into every other home, then we get the highest speeds possible. One link to this home, another link to another home, and so on. That's the best case approach with optical fiber. Go direct to the home. And on the next slide, you'll see it's referred to as fiber to the home. In that case, we can get high-speed internet or high-speed IP access to the home. We're talking about hundreds of megabits per second, gigabit per second to the home. But that's very expensive because now we need individual cables going to every home, and putting those cables in is very expensive. So some alternatives. Bring the telephone exchange or bring that termination point of the optical fiber closer to the home. Maybe not as clear, but I'm trying to draw this telephone exchange point to be closer to the home, such that this copper link is much shorter. Because we see if we have short distances using the copper technologies with ADSL and DSL, we can get higher data rates. And still uses their copper link into here, but we just have a special device which is closer to the home. That would need more devices. Because if we previously had one telephone exchange for a whole suburb, or for say 10,000 users, if we want to bring these termination points of our optical fibre closer, we would need more termination points per area. So maybe per 10,000 users we have 100 of these special devices. We have optical fibre into each of them and copper cables from the home to this special device. So we get on the next slide, I hope, these variations. The best case is fibre to the home. Have a fibre cable directly into your home, into every home. But if we cannot achieve that, then we try to bring the fibre as close as possible to the home. And some of the technologies you may hear about are fibre to the curb and fibre to the node. And really they differ by how close they get to a set of homes. Fibre to the curb or to a street level. The fibre cable runs to a particular street and then maybe the tens of houses on that street use their copper cable to connect into a special termination box. So that's very close to the home. Tens of metres, hundreds of metres. Or fibre to the node where maybe it covers hundreds of thousands of nodes. We have a special termination point, the fibre comes into that, and maybe the 100 homes in that neighbourhood all connect into that point. So bringing the fibre closer to the home can increase the speeds that we can deliver to the home. That's the concepts of these. But the higher the cost is of using optical fibre. That is, the more or the closer we come to the home, the higher the cost is of deploying that network. So different cities and different countries have chosen different approaches for their future networks or variations. So, and I think that finishes for this topic. We've covered things reasonably quickly, but the main concepts of delivering TV across the internet. In terms of the access network, we'd like to use optical fibre because it supports high speeds. But, and the closer we get the optical fibre to the home, the faster we can achieve the data transfer. But the more expensive it becomes to deploy the network because most homes don't have optical fibre to them. There are other options, maybe wireless, maybe Ethernet, but only in special cases. So that's the access network. Inside the home itself, we can use wireless LAN and Ethernet for delivery of content. The core network, which is operated by an ISP, uses things like SDH, an optical fibre. It uses quality of service mechanisms to make sure that the video gets priority over other applications. We use multicast so that we can send one copy of the TV, the core network, and then send multiple copies to each customer who's watching, saving capacity of the core. But if we want to do video demand, the individual copy for everyone who's watching that video. And that increases the capacity requirements of our core network. The ISP's core network would typically connect to the general internet, to another ISP for our normal internet access, to a telephone network for our normal telephone access, whether it's mobile or fixed access, and content will be distributed from the TV stations into the ISP's network via video head-end device, which converts the TV into a format that could be sent across the IP network. Integrating the services of TV, telephone and internet into the one network, hopefully providing cheaper services to the end user and better quality of service to the end user. And another number of countries either do this, either on a countrywide basis, or individual companies do this. So some service providers will provide such a service. pay them for internet telephone. Of course, different countries have plans for doing this in the future. That is, deploying optical fiber so that they can provide IPTV services. And that finishes this topic on multimedia applications. So what we'll do this afternoon is have a quick recap on what we know and then move on to the next. And in fact, the last topic for the course is peer-to-peer systems. So if you have any more questions about the assignment, think about them, because I think this afternoon is the last chance before the deadline to ask questions or to discuss things. So we can discuss that this afternoon.